If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will save it. What does it profit them if they gain the whole world but lose or forfeit themselves? Those who are ashamed of me and of my words, of them the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in his glory and the glory of the Father and the holy angels. Now, 8 days later, his transfiguration takes place, which is God saying yes to Jesus and yes to his teaching. So, from what we have seen so far, does God or Jesus or the writer of Luke believe that discipleship is small and convenient? Small and convenient. Yes, no? No. Let's continue by moving past the transfiguration story to today's scripture. And that says Luke 37 and 38. On the next day, when they had come down from the mountain, so the transfiguration just took place, a great crowd met him. Just then a man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He's my only child." Whoops. "He's my only child." So now, the very next day, they just had this awesome transfiguration experience. And if you remember back to your Old Testament, Moses' face glowed when he came down from the mountain of God. And do you remember that it scared the people so bad that he put a covering over his face so that people couldn't see his face for the 2 or 3 days that it took for that to fade away, right? And so that's the connection there, all right? In this transfiguration story, Luke trusts that his readers are going to connect that, all right? And then he has Moses and Elijah talking to Jesus. This is a big deal, right? I mean, it's such a big deal that Peter wants to build tents for each of the three of them, right? And in Eric fashion, God says, "Peter, would you just shut up and listen to Jesus," right? And so for all of us that are Peters out there in the world, you understand what I'm talking about. Just hush up and listen. Anyway, so they came down from this huge event, and when they got down to the bottom of the mountain, right, they threw a big party, didn't they? "We know who Jesus is. God told us who Jesus..." That's what they did, right? Right? They had a big meeting on Christology or the study of Christ, right? Isn't that what they did? They didn't do that? No. No. They are put right back into the trenches, folks. And they are met by a large crowd and an epileptic boy. Now, I want you to notice something. In verse 42, Jesus heals the boy and gave him back to his father. The story repeats what seems to be a pattern in the Gospel of Luke, a pattern of Jesus taking what was brought or given to him, blessing it, and then giving it back. That happens a lot in Luke. Examples are the leper in chapter 5, the paralytic in chapter 5, the man that was withered with the withered hand in chapter 6. He raised the widow's son at Nain and gave him to his mother in chapter 7. He took loaves, blessed them, and gave them back in chapter 9. And now he gives the boy back to his father after being healed. Therefore, in Luke, if blessing involves giving back, then faith is demonstrated in what we give to the Lord. If blessing involves Jesus giving back, then faith is demonstrated in what we give to the Lord. Luke 6:38 puts it like this: "Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure in which you give, you will get back." The measure in which you give, you will get back. Now, I ask you again, does small and convenient discipleship hold true in the Gospel of Luke? I've tried to kind of lay it out there, so it's a pretty obvious waiting for you, Ted. You see, Luke's grasp of this giving and blessing principle explains why the verb to give occurs 60 times in Luke. It is the most of all the New Testament aside from the Gospel of John where that is used.